Morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every morning, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 a.m. and the great Steve Cochran with your morning drive at 6. My first guest this morning is live in studio. His name is Tom Britton. He's the creator of Freak Show and Tell, and he's been on the show. Now, we were talking about this off the air about 5 times.
Yeah, this is the 5th time, the 3rd time with this show, but yeah. The nice thing of you and Dan are kind enough to have me in for about every show.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I'm so excited to have you back. Well, first of all, tell everybody about yourself. You are the creator of Freak Show and Tell, but you're more than that. Give everybody your background, because the story is fantastic. Ever since you were a kid, you were obsessed with weird stuff.
Since I was, 9, 10, 11, about the same age everyone else discovers some book in the library on P.T. Barnum and the freaks, Tom Thumb and the giant elephants and all this stuff he would tour with. But I got a little more into it than most, and by the time I was 16 years old, I was working in a carnival. Mostly sweeping the floors and cleaning up and selling popcorn, but they would let me. Even as a young kid, I had a little better than average propensity for talking. The way any radio show or stand-up comedian, kind of, you're always a little better at the public speaking angle.
Sure, man.
So they'd let me get up and do a little bit of my razzle-dazzle shtickla. By the time I was 17, I was eating fire, swallowing swords, jumping on broken glass, and talking the entire show. Mm. So if you had an act, say, contortion, or you put needles through yourself, right? You've seen these sideshow acts. But you didn't really want to talk your act. I would do what's called professoring the show. So there's Nick D over in the corner, not like you or I, a freak of nature. Watch now as he puts his foot completely behind his head, ladies and gentlemen. So I'd professor your act.
Got it.
And then that's all through college. That's what I did every summer, every chance I got. And then to show off at parties. You know, what do you do? Well, I breathe fire, or I juggle chainsaws or something. That you try and impress women. Didn't work. Learned to play guitar instead. play bass. Much better. And then, by the time I was in my mid-20s, I started a touring show with various partners. And I've got 3 shows going on. I've got the Danger Circus, a 3-man troupe. Mm-hmm. We've been in here before.
Yep.
Freak Show and Tell, which is my smaller, that's my sort of novelty homegrown. It's never left Chicago, really.
Yeah.
It's my one-man sort of memoir. So that story writ large on stage, right? How I got into it and how I learned to eat fire. And then I eat fire and explain how fire eating works. That's the show and tell part.
Yeah.
And then Acrobatica Infinity is this Friday also at Uptown Underground. It's a proper, like, circus troupe. Now, it's not mine. It's my friend Tank's. But that's high wire walkers and trapeze artists, and I MC that one. So I'm also now talking
kind
of professoring the show back to my roots.
That's great, man. So let's talk a little bit about when did you start getting into obviously you were into it for a while, but when did you really start getting into the history of it and learning about the people who are responsible for this art form?
Probably well before. That was probably first.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I think my obsession was with, like, the Lobster Boy.
Yeah.
Right? Well, that guy's name was Grady Stiles, and that's a congenital birth defect. So he passed it on to his children.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an entire family of lobster people out there.
Yeah.
What I liked about Grady Stiles was, 1, a bit of an alcohol problem, 2, a mean drunk, and 3, really good in a bar fight. He had little stumps for legs, and yet one of the other people who lived in Gibtown, this is Gibsonton, Florida, Gibtown, that's the freak capital of the world.
Capital of the world.
So you can't work during the winter, right? So where do you hold up?
Yeah.
Florida.
Yeah.
It's also everything in Gibsonton is zoned commercial, the whole town, because they wanted the circus there, which means, you know, those high strikers, test your strength and smack the bing.
Yeah.
You can put it on your front lawn and paint it, which you have to do in the off season, right? You got to touch up the paint and put it back on the train, yeah? There's a place there called the Giants Cafe that was Gene and Al Tomaney, the world's strangest married couple. She, a half woman born without legs, very little below the waist, in fact. He, over 7 feet tall, they met in the sideshow and married and opened a cafe in Gibsonton. In Gibtown, where he'd go, here was the problem. When he was working, he worked 18 hours a day, 20 hours a day. It's a hard life, right?
Yeah.
And he's knocking back the scotch in between every show, but how much can he possibly drink? Well, come November, wake up at 10 a.m., start drinking. By 3 p.m., he's angry. Also, his wife was cheating on him with a little person. And he would get in bar fights. And one friend described it as he would come off that seat and scuttle across the ground and climb up you and with those crabbish hands begin beating you in the face. He was a violent man.
Mm.
Possibly killed by his wife's lover. possibly killed someone else. He suspected of being his wife's lover. That's the story you get of Grady Stiles. Suspected of murder, suspected of being murdered.
This is one of the first stories that you go, no wonder you became fascinated. I mean, yeah. My God, right out of the gate, you've got murder, you've got alcoholism, you've got a lobster
story.
Guy.
It's amazing.
It's insane.
Yeah, and the person telling the story, it worked as a dwarf juggling clown. So it's also a circus freak is explaining that, you know, when we worked with Grady, he'd be fine. But then in the off season, he'd get all crazy.
Yeah.
Like it's that character.
Wow.
And so you find them again and again and again.
Well, that's what I was just going to say, that literally tons of these kind of characters in that realm.
Long history and both good and bad. Mm. You know, a lot of people wanted to ban the freak shows. And for good reason, there was a lot of racism, a lot of like the Hottentot Venus was one. An unusually proportioned African woman. So there is a condition where the, let's call it the baby got back effect, mm-hmm. goes out of control. And so there's a statue called the Hottentot Venus, and so she was branded as such, but also not paid well, the racism of the era. This is late 1800s.
Yeah.
A black female of African, so not even African American. She barely speaks the language, doesn't know the culture, so even easier to exploit.
Yeah.
And was exploited horrifically.
I would imagine, man, that went on a lot.
Yeah. Well, and also pinheads, encephalates, so you have people who were born with a very pointed head and generally mentally slower than most, very mentally challenged in most cases. In fact, moderate mental retardation is the best you can hope for.
And now, for people who aren't familiar with a lot of this stuff, if they saw Todd Browning's movie, Freaks, and a lot of those people were...
Zippy is a pinhead.
Yeah.
Zippy the pinhead is famous.
He's in the film Freaks.
Yeah, he wears a dress. That's his preferred method of dressing, so a lot of people think it's a she, but Zippy is a male.
Okay. And that would be, those are the kind of acts that you're talking about.
And so how easily could you exploit them? I could sell Zippy's contract to you. Zippy has no idea what's going on. Zippy's incapable of that level of functioning. How much do you feed him? How much do you clothe him? How much do you care about him?
Yeah.
You know, and so when it comes time to ban the freak show, it's hard to make a case against it when I can point to these examples of extreme exploitation.
Yeah.
But then there's also folks who, if you ever watched Carnival on HBO, there's a little person who owns the carnival. That also wasn't uncommon for big acts to get a shot at a real life.
Does this kind of stuff still exist?
Yes, yes.
Not as frequently, though.
In India, all over the place.
Oh, okay.
Remember, most people are Indochinian and Chinese on the planet. So, yes, in the heaviest populated part of the world, in our corner, the minority, Americans... No.
Yeah.
But if you go to Mexico, you'll see more. And there's also more empowerment. The good news is there is a wolf family. These wolf-faced boys, congenital birth defect. They're trapeze artists, and they work in the circus. And so certainly what they were born with is part of what they're exploiting. Like any good-looking woman or an NBA player exploits genetic gifts.
Mm-hmm.
But they're a trapeze act, and they're respected. And now we have laws, and they could appeal, etc. In developing countries is where you still see the exploitation. There's a Spider Girl in particular. There's a Ricky Gervais show called An Idiot Abroad you can find on Netflix.
Yeah.
He sees the Spider Girl live in that.
I watched that episode, yes.
Those are the conditions you're working in. Yeah. Now, how empowered is she? I don't know. What's her mental abilities? Who's watching out for her? Is her mom and dad helping manage her? I don't know. And that's cause for concern in developing nations. But hopefully, just like us, they'll go down a path where they'll either offer protections or, you know, ban certain aspects, et cetera.
Yeah.
Most of the what are called born freaks as opposed to me described as a working act. So I have no genetic propensity.
Right.
I've learned these skill sets. I'm what's called a working act.
Right.
The born freaks or natural freaks were always the moneymakers.
Right.
You know, you pay to see the two-headed wolf boy.
Right.
And then I get up there and swallow swords beforehand. You know, it's okay, but bring on the wolf boy.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to see a two-headed wolfman.
Hold on one second. We got a break. Tom Britton is with us. He's got loads of information, really crazy stuff. Freak Show and Tell is one of the things that he's doing right now, and we'll give you details on that and more right here on 720 WGN. We got a break for the news, which is up next. Morning, everybody. How you doing? Welcome back to the show. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're here till 5 a.m., and my guest is Tom Britton, who is the creator of Freak Show and Tell, and it is a show that explains the science behind sideshow acts. Is that a great summation of it?
Very, very much so. It's sort of the questions I always get when I would just perform these things and not explain them. Afterwards, okay, so what are you using to eat fire? Why are you not burned? Like, is it a magic trick? What are you doing? And if so, how are you? Are you a great sleight of hand illusionist? Like, how are you doing this?
Yeah.
And that kind of became my bullet points when I sat down to write the show. So that's what I explain, is it isn't a magic trick. It's closer to a physics demonstration, like your high school teacher would do with a bed of nails. But I explain all that's the show and tell part. It's also why it's 18 and over, please.
18 and over, yeah.
I'm explaining how to eat fire.
Right.
So maybe the 12-year-old precocious kid who wouldn't normally feels like they have the answers now.
Oh, now I can go home and eat fire.
Yeah.
18 and over.
I prefer 18 and over. I've done it for, like I did the International Science and Engineering Festival. And I sent them my scripts. These are all like high school kids from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, between 14, 15 to 17, 18. It's a scripted show, thank God. I sent them my script, and I'm like, this is what I'm saying, and I don't have kids. So are they going to go? These are smart kids that are clearly like playing with electricity. They're playing with gunpowder. They're playing with chemicals. They're into that stuff.
Right.
Am I going to be responsible for death?
Right.
So I guess it should be 18 and over or an IQ of 150 and above. I guess the other were like, nah, these kids are pretty much, they're the 1,300 finalists in the world for science fair.
Right.
So they sent it back with like, nope, looks good.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So yeah, it was the one time I performed for children. I was like, you guys are educators. I'm a carny.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, the last thing you want to do is put a carny in front of a bunch of kids.
Who goes, hey, here's how you kill yourself.
Right.
Have a good night. Yeah. I'm flying out on a plane back to Chicago.
Now, there is a show before the show.
There is.
Tell us about that, because this is pretty
cool. So we've been in here before with Jeff Wack from the College of Curiosities.
That's
and all
right.
those toys.
Yeah.
So he sets up these tables. So it came of a necessity. My audience cannot show up on time. They come in 20 minutes late.
Yeah.
So I started thinking, well, what could I do to get you to come in? Like, if I gave you a free beer from the bar, like a ticket, but you can only get it for the first 30 minutes the doors are open? I came up with all these razzle-dazzle P.T. Barnum ideas and tried them, and nope, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
One free beer will not motivate my audience. They need more.
Yeah.
And so Jeff does College of Curiosity. So on a fluke, he said, well, why don't I do my little show there on his table, and he'll invite some of his friends to come see that, and they'll see the show. And I thought, well, that's great. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, sure, absolutely. He gets a venue to perform in and space, and then he brings some people to the show. That's a win-win for everybody.
Right.
Well, he brought four tables of stuff. Some of it's radioactive. Some of it's plugged in. He does a whole, like, street show behind the tables.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't just, like, hand you stuff. He's like, does anyone know what this is? Well, this is a... He does a whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite part of my show is his part of my show.
Yeah.
His show's incredible. And then he, like, ladies and gentlemen, if you would, please go into the theater. Like, he's really slick at this stuff.
Yeah.
And he's an educator.
Now, what are some of the things that he's brought in?
Oh, he brought, what is it?
You had some of it in here before.
Coprolite. Coprolite is 300-million-year-old dinosaur poo.
Right.
Yeah, it's coprolite. You can buy it online. You go on Amazon, coprolite. Really cool. Now, this is when we wrote the show for kids. We did it at the Whip Theater, right?
Yeah.
So we did a version for kids. There's nothing more fun than handing a bunch of, like, 12-year-olds rocks. Like, there's polished stones. They're really pretty, in fact.
Yeah.
And then, does anyone know what this is? And they start guessing. You know, it's dinosaur poop. Oh, you got them. You tell a 12-year-old kid there's a poop joke,
yeah,
he loves it.
That's it.
Now
you've
got their engagement, right?
Right.
Like, oh, I'm holding poo, ha, 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 ha. And then he's got so Benjamin Franklin invented all these cool electronic gizmos.
Mm-hmm.
And we know about flying a kite to prove electricity, lightning was actually electricity, which may or may not have happened. He had other experiments. But he also made this really cool thing. When you wind it up, it would swing a piece of metal back and forth and ring bells. That's because it's oscillating between positive and negative,
yeah,
and rings the bells. And then also, he used that to test his lightning rod, which you don't realize how many homes were saved because Ben Franklin put out the lightning rod.
Mm-hmm.
One, because it's a brilliant invention. But two, imagine if, like, Steve Jobs came out with lightning rod. Everyone knows about it. I mean, also, he's alive. But everyone knows about it the next day, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if I come up with it, 20 people would know about it on the street corners. I hustled it, right?
Right.
So Benjamin Franklin had a platform to instantly start selling hundreds of thousands of lightning rods.
Got it.
And suddenly, almost overnight, lightning strike on a home isn't a problem anymore.
Wow.
And so he gives a demonstration, sort of tells that story and shows you how a lightning rod really works, which I never actually, I just thought you threw a piece of metal on the roof and you were done.
Yeah.
He shows how it will take off all this amperage that would really hurt you if you were to touch this thing. So it's that kind of really hands-on.
Right.
He also hands stuff out to people. You know, what do you think that is? Like, take a get, like a puzzle. Like, what is this? Like, he has mystery objects. Because his whole thing is creating curiosity about the world.
Mm.
And then my whole thing is sort of, I guess, exploiting as a writing mechanic the natural curiosity you have about the side. Like, okay, I've eaten fire, and you're thinking, how? Why are you not dead? Why are you not scarred? How do you know this crap?
Yeah.
And so I'm sort of using that as a mechanic for writing a show.
Right.
So it fits real nicely together. But it also brought my audience in earlier.
That was what you were doing for.
Yeah, they were there on time to see the show.
And people can get all the information about the show, freakshowandtell.com. Freakshowandtell.com is the website. We have a link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. You were telling me off the air when you came in that you had to actually rewrite an entire section of your show. What's going on?
It broke my heart. So the upside, the good part about being a fact-based show, is that if you want to do your research, it's done for you. Go to Wikipedia, scroll to the bottom of the page, there's the sources. You buy those books on Amazon, put them in your Kindle, you read the books, you're done.
Yeah.
And then you write like a book report, there's your show.
Yeah.
The downside is facts change. The nice thing about science is that we change our mind as new data is given. We don't hold to an idea any more than human nature, but you try and let go and accept the new data.
Got it.
I had a big, really funny, really cool part of my show that worked really well. And you know, as a comedian, how much you hate to let go of material that works the room.
Yeah.
Edison killed Topsy the elephant. January 3rd, 1903. And the whole story was hung around Edison taking out Topsy in his war with Nikola Tesla. And that's the story. And then I demonstrate Tesla's electric box that he would do in his show. So I do a piece of Tesla's actual show, like a cover band in my show. But that was the story leading up to it. Big, long story, really funny, blah, blah, blah. Edison did not have anything to do with Topsy, so that episode of Bob's Burgers was also wrong.
Yeah.
They did a whole really funny episode. I still recommend the episode. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But, and they don't have the factual basis. They're not worried on Bob's Burgers about being inaccurate.
Right.
But no, a company bearing the Edison name, of which, like, say you and I just started Apple Computer. Well, back then, who's going to sue us?
Right.
No, the laws are much looser. Edison also had kind of a loser son, a little bit, Thomas Edison Jr., who would sign on to boards. And you'd get the name, and then he'd wander off and sell his name to someone else kind of thing. So there were a lot of just Edison Wireless, Edison Electric, and some were kind of legit, and some were just, I like the name Edison.
Mm.
Like Kodak, I'm just going to take it now. And Thomas Edison did kill elephants. He did, not personally pulled the switch, but he signed off on it. His companies were responsible for that, and dogs and cats and bunnies. He was doing this to show how dangerous AC current was, because, of course, he's selling DC current products.
Okay.
Right. That's
so
slick, right?
So what did they want to show how powerful it was by getting an elephant?
Do that with DC current. DC current is static electricity. It's surface current. You'd have to have 12 trillion volts.
Yeah.
But 100,000 volts of AC will take you out. Like, that's a live wire on the side of the highway, right?
Yeah.
And it's dancing around. DC current is much safer. Unfortunately, the reason we use AC and convert it is, one, you can do that. Tesla was right. But also, AC, once you take it up, you put it in a transformer is what you do. And you drop amperage and wattage and you gain voltage. And now it'll go forever. In a properly shielded cable, and like 1903, we have a properly shielded cable. It's not a hard thing to put some rubber around a piece of wire. It's properly shielded. From here to the moon. Now, how you get to the moon, I don't know. But if you do get it on the moon, I can send enough voltage up there to power your, I don't know, iPhone. DC doesn't go that far.
Mm.
And so we build one at Niagara Falls and to this day power a third of the United States. DC current, we would have had to put one in every single neighborhood.
Mm.
It doesn't go as far.
Right.
But the pitch is it's safer, and that's what Edison was counting on and demonizing it. AC current kills.
Mm.
AC current kills. Oh, it's called the current wars. The current wars is what they called it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tesla and Edison were in such a big battle. Now, I still cover that in the show.
Now, how did you change it? What did you...
Well, I went out a little bit. I was hanging everything on Topsy. This one date in Topsy. And I had jokes about Topsy and how she was killed and what she had done, blah, blah, blah. I made it bigger. And the whole story is that Tesla's this underdog. He's up against Steve Jobs meets P.T. Barnum.
Right.
This really slick... And Nikola Tesla's a huge weirdo.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was in love with a pigeon. Not kidding. He was asexual and talked about that at parties, which makes people, I mean, you can have whatever sexuality you want, but maybe mentioning it in 1903 was a bad idea.
David Bowie played him in the,
yes,
in the movie.
Yes, but asexual, not even.
Right, no, yeah.
David Bowie was a little more interesting in a different direction.
Yeah.
And talked about being in love with a pigeon and wrote love letters to her. And again, talked about this. And we shouldn't judge the message for the messenger, but we do.
Mm-hmm.
Also, English was his third language. He was Serbian born.
Mm-hmm.
So he talked a bit like Yoda sometimes he did.
Yeah.
And the transitives messed him up. And, you know, and he was a bit nerdier. Well, the problem is you're both in sales now and you're getting your butt kicked.
Mm-hmm.
So once I kind of pull the camera out a little bit and talk about the current wars and how much Edison is slick compared to how little Tesla is, I still have some conflict to write from. It just broke my heart because you lose a lot of really fun material.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're going to be a fact-based show, I'm going to have to deal with this eight more times in my life.
That's,
you know, as I get new information, I'm going to have to rewrite stuff.
That's
know?
Right. That's Tom Britton we're talking to. He's the creator of Freak Show and Tell. It explains the science behind sideshow acts, which you perform. And you can get all the information at freakshowandtell.com and a link on our Facebook page. Another unique thing before we take a break is that you pay after you see the show.
Yeah, you pay what you think it was worth after you see the show. So similar to a street show.
Right.
You see the whole show, and then at the end, you pay what you think. What do you think it was worth?
Okay.
I've got a square reader. You can take cash, firstborn, livestock. Bring whatever you like. I'll take it.
All right. That's Tom Britton. We're going to take a break. Talk more with Tom about his show and some other stuff, too, here on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio, and we shall return. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studios, seventh floor of the Trib Tower, and we're talking with Tom Britton, who's the creator of Freak Show and Tell. Tom, welcome back.
Thanks.
And the show, the Freak Show and Tell, you do explain these things that you do. What are people's most common? What are some of the most common questions that you get from people? What are the ones that really, you know, that stick out?
A lot of them are just a general sort of how. So, for example, the Tesla coil thing. I stand on top of a box and 100,000 volts of electricity runs through my body. And you can't see that. It's not the kind of type of Tesla coil you've seen before that plays music. It's a different application that Tesla used. Mm-hmm. Although he did that one, too, in his show. But I liked this one because you don't see it very often. But then when I touch a fluorescent light bulb, it lights up. And it follows my hand back and forth.
Mm.
And then my wife, who has to be in the show because she's my wife and is obliged to do this crap, she's an accountant. She is the finest accountant working in Freak Show today. She's the most reliable person I've got. I need someone to ground out that loop.
Right.
I'm ungrounded standing on this box. Thank God I'm ungrounded or it would really hurt.
Yeah.
Then I touch a torch and it bursts into flame. So it's like a superpower. And then we light it off my face while reverse fire eating. And then I put it out. Fire eating, right?
Right.
And so when you just perform that, you just play a song and perform it, which is what I was doing in my 20s. You're sitting in the audience thinking, what am I, is this a magic trick? What? You don't even know where to begin with the question. What?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
What? Is it a trick bulb? And then what broke my heart was I didn't realize for a long time the advantage of doing science as opposed to my friend Carrie in the Danger Circus who does magic.
Yeah.
I got nothing to hide, man. Nothing. I could open the box and go, look, there's two Tesla coils. I got them wired together in tandem.
Yeah.
They go up into this plate. Then I stand on the plate. Why are you not dead? Well, because I'm a terrible conductor of electricity. And actually, it's amperage and wattage in tune with voltage that kills you. And I realized this was interesting to people, like a TED Talk.
Yeah.
But a really dynamic, crazy TED Talk. But you know, this is an original. Humphrey Davy. This is 1800s London. Humphrey Davy was called, well, now we'd call him the Justin Bieber of his day, of science.
Okay.
They used to call him the Donny Osmond of his day.
Right.
A gorgeous man. Fully half the gallery is filled with swooning females.
Mm-hmm.
He also was a galvanist, so galvanization of metals, and discovered elements. So a real scientist, so popular, the first one-way road is outside the Royal Institution, London's first, because the traffic was so crazy, they didn't know what to do. And they brought the first. So science was the most popular show of its day. Marie Curie, right? Polonium, radium, Marie Curie, 80% of her funding, ticket sales.
Wow.
Ticket sales. She's doing the same thing I do, but she goes into real science. I'm going to buy booze. But if she takes your money and does real Nobel Prize winning science with her husband,
right?
80% was ticket sales. So that idea of it being interesting is I'm doing nothing new. Fire eating's old. Glass walking's old. Tesla coil is, well, Tesla's day, so the early 1900s.
Right.
This is stuff I'm repurposing, but including the idea of doing science for adults in a theater setting as if I'm competing with Second City or Blue Man Group. Not that I'm on that level, but that's your attention. You could have gone and seen them or gone and seen Hamilton, right, for a lot more money.
Yeah.
But those are my competitors, yeah? That's not new either. Humphrey Davy, Michael Faraday, the Faraday cage and all that. That was the protege of Humphrey Davy.
Yeah.
He started the Christmas show at the Royal Institution for kids, 1800s. Kids entertainment doesn't exist. This is way before Dick Clark. I mean, barely before Dick Clark.
Yeah.
He's 1,000 years old. People don't know that. He'll outlive us all. He and Keith Richards will eventually inherit this earth. He started the kids program, which still runs every scientist you've ever heard of, which is mostly just Carl Sagan and Neil deGrasse Tyson. But if you can name 50 more, every one of them has had a turn hosting the Christmas show.
Mm.
So science as an art form of performance is not new.
Yeah.
It's just, it feels like I invented it because it's been dead for so long.
Right. Right. Now tell me about Danger Circus. Yep. You guys are going to be touring starting in the fall.
We start in the fall. We're touring colleges and a few small halls. So anything smaller than 300 seats is called a small hall. Mm-hmm. Although at the point where I'm playing, we call it a black box. Like, I got 50 seats.
Right.
It technically is a small hall, but no one
right.
calls it that.
Right.
Gets around 200 to 300 seats. You got a small hall. We start in September. So really the college, you know, they come in August, but they've got to get acclimated. So around September, we start touring. If you're listening to this, well, in Illinois, go to dangercircus.com. Right now, there's not a lot of tour dates because they're booking right now.
Yeah, sure, because it's only July. Right now, yeah.
And they get their budget approved on July 1st. So this next 2 weeks.
Next
is when
couple
we
of
ask,
weeks.
Yeah. But by the time September comes around, we'll be in Ohio, downstate New York, so near Ohio, but bridging into New York. We've already got one in West Virginia. We'll do a block around there. And Pennsylvania is always a big one for us. And then Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit in Indiana, but currently just a few leads, nothing booked.
And tell us about Danger Circus.
So that's three people. So I cover then the freak show.
Mm-hmm.
But then this is kind of fun because you get to contrast. So the difference between what I do, which is more just a hip physics teacher. You know, they'd lay on a bed of nails. I'm going to jump on a bed of glass instead. So
yeah.
A little more dramatic. But I can explain it. Contrasted with my buddy Carrie, who's an illusionist. He either can't because it's always like it's just sort of lame. He goes, oh, I got one hidden in my pocket. Oh, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Or to heck with you. I invented it. I'm not telling you how it works. Like he's a magician. He wants to keep his secret.
Sure.
That's what's fun for him is to have this hidden thing involved. And then Chuck Clark is a juggler. So you have three types of amazement, right? One, I need to explain so you understand how it's not a magic trick. That I'm not hiding anything in my mouth. It's not magical fluid. I'm eating the fire. It's physics. Carrie, who will tell you nothing, if he eats fire, it's a trick.
Mm-hmm.
And he's hiding something. He's got cotton in his mouth or something, right?
Right.
And then Chuck, who doesn't need to explain, he's juggling five knives. What's he going to say? I throw it up and then I catch it.
Mm-hmm.
The secret is 4 hours a day of practice. So you have three very different ways of causing amazement in people. And I kind of have a foot in both worlds because I present things as if they're a magic trick. But then as I get into the script, you realize I'm more a juggler, really. I'm sort of playing with things that you could do, too, if you just tried real hard and practiced or built a Tesla coil and learned how they worked.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd learned these underpinnings, you could do it, too. Whereas the magic, well, you don't know.
Because he won't tell you.
It may be hard. It may take hundreds of hours. Some of the stuff is real, like dexterous, hard-to-do stuff. Other things, you flip a switch, the trap door goes off.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Yeah.
So the Danger Circus is fun to kind of write with because we all can contrast off each other. And so the first half of the show is defining that, and the second half is when we start blending them together. So then you don't know where the – like Carrie, Kaz, and I do a straitjacket escape together. And so you don't know if he's fooling you or if it's me using leverage in physics. And so we kind of debate and battle back and forth on the stage.
Yeah.
So we start blending them together. It's a really, really fun show.
Now, do you you know, when you do colleges, do you do a Q&A or anything afterwards?
We accidentally do. So Freak Show and Tell was born from that. So what we like to do is I call it a merch table, but nothing's for sale. Because you're paying us to be there already and you're college kids. What do you have, a dollar?
Yeah.
So I don't want to sell T-shirts. So we print something cheap. Postcards, 8x10 headshots or little 11x17 posters, stickers, tattoos, etc. And we give them away.
Yeah.
And we'll sign things for you. And that's where people go, oh, hey, great show. Loved it. Could you sign this for me? Hey, how long does it take you every day to learn to do that, Chuck?
Yeah.
And so that's our Q&A. And then the joke with Freak Show and Tell from an older show I did was that I always got the same three questions. Like the magician's questions would vary. At that time, it was a contortionist and aerialist young lady. Her questions would vary. Mine were the same three or four. It became like a joke in the car. Like, I wonder what they'll ask me at the end of the show.
Right.
No, why are you not burned? What is the gas that you're using? What is that fuel?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they cared about.
Yeah.
So we do a Q&A at the end of the show, but it's more now since we answer a lot of it. You know, Carrie's just going to say, I'm not going to tell you.
Right.
He's just going to be like, nope.
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 No. So have you found that the popularity of these things comes in waves?
Yes.
Yeah. Are we at high tide right now? I think so. Yeah.
I mean, I think vaudeville, I think live, because everything you want on YouTube and Netflix you can get.
Yeah.
But there's something, it doesn't translate well. That's why there's so few variety performers really killing it. Now there's been more than before because they figured out how to write for like America's Got Talent and whatever the others are called.
Yeah.
They've figured out how to do it. But even then, there's something different live. You just can't replicate it on YouTube. Like, you see Penn and Teller performing, or the Flying Karamazov Brothers, or Blue Man Group. When's the last time you watched a clip of Blue Man Group on YouTube?
Yeah.
It doesn't translate. It looks stupid and lame.
Yeah.
But you go to the show, and you're like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah.
Now, or Cirque du Soleil. I've watched Victor Cree, the juggler in Cirque du Soleil. I've watched his 9 minutes, like, showing my friends. He's my favorite juggler.
Yeah.
And, no, I'm like, oh, never mind. Stop this. This is boring. But if you saw it live, every second was magical. Like,
yeah.
This guy's act is so polished.
You know, that's a really good point that you make, man, because there is a huge difference between maybe watching some of this stuff, these sort of weird blurry clips on YouTube, yeah, as opposed to seeing it live.
Well, you're going to see that in Airplane, too. The difference between watching Airplane on a DVD,
yeah,
and in a theater with people laughing.
Yeah.
You laugh out loud at things, that, especially comedies,
yeah,
that if you're just watching it Netflix at home, you just get...
Yeah.
Well,
it's going to be a lot of fun tonight. And you were telling me off the air that and Kentucky Fried Movie are two of your favorites.
Two, my wife and I both. We still quote a lot of Airplane, but especially Kentucky Fried Movie,
yeah,
man. We quote all that.
I mean, Kentucky Fried Movie, I remember I was a kid when I really saw that movie at an inappropriate age. very inappropriate. I saw it when it came out, so I was like 11 or 12 when,
wow,
I saw that movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's why you're here today.
That's why I'm on it. That's why I'm on it. 3 o'clock in the morning, my friend. All right. Well, listen, man, it's always a blast having you on. I always learn stuff.
Man.
You're very entertaining. And it's Tom Britton, and the show is Freak Show and Tell. You can also learn, and you pay what you think it's worth after you see the show.
As you leave.
Get there early and see the College of Curiosity. Hands-on demonstrations, all kinds of cool stuff. All the information is at freakshowandtell.com for tickets and showtimes and all that stuff. And you can just check out our link at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Tom, always a pleasure, man.
Thank you so much.
Come back. You know, come back when you guys are going to kick off the tour for...
I absolutely will. Yeah, we'll get it on camera, too. We'll bring Chuck in. We got a 6-foot unicycle. Kerry Kaz. He doesn't even do card tricks in our show, and he's one of the best card magicians I've ever seen.
We'll get a video in here next time.
Yeah, so all stuff right? You can't even see in the show, we'll do here in the studio.
We'll do that Danger Circus coming up in September.
Absolutely.
All right, Tom, thanks, man. We'll take a quick break. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.